Julian McGrath, welcome to Full Story.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a long journey to this point where the ban is coming into effect, and it's a test case for the rest of the world. How are you feeling about it coming into this week?
Well, as you said, it has been a long journey, probably the most novel piece of legislation with the most amount of interdependencies, the most complexity and nuance than we've ever rolled out. And of course, this very much follows the trajectory of all the work that we've done at the eSafety Office. As the first online safety regulator, there has been no playbook for this. So we have engaged in quite a bit of mental gymnastics to make sure that we roll this out in a way that meets what we believe are the digital rights of the child, but put the onus totally on the platforms themselves, and that we're actually making sure that we're communicating with educators, with parents and carers and young people to make sure that they're prepared. And this, of course, will continue through the transition. And I say transition because, you know, we're not expecting totally smooth sailing.
Then from that answer, it's not really sort of looking at it as a, like, is it going to be a failure kind of thing? You're more, there'll be issues along the way rather than you can say it's a success or a failure at some point.
Yeah. And, you know, I've been asked, like, what are your measures of success or metrics of success? So we're looking at ABS data and PBS data, test score data. So everything from, are kids sleeping more? Are they interacting more? Are they actually getting out on the sport fields? Are they reading books? Are they taking less medication like antidepressants? That's what the PBS data is for. Are their NAPLAN scores improving over time? And on the unintended consequences side, although I think we're all thinking about these things, have they gone to darker areas of the internet? Have they all learned how to use a Tor browser? Maybe not, but you know, what are the platforms, of course, that they're migrating to? And of course, we contemplated that 6 months ago when we started sort of building the scaffolding for the regulatory guidance. You know, we watched what U.S. kids did in the U.S. when TikTok was went dark for 2 days. You know, of course, kids went to Lemonade and Red Note. So we expect that. And we've been having productive discussions with the likes of the UBOs and the Blue Skies of the world, which I think would be obvious migratory candidates. But we've also written to 15 other companies, including the likes of Yoke. And those will probably change and expand. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'd just say, Josh, this is not me exempting any of them. As I think you understand well, I guess one of the results of a very rapidly contemplated bill is that the policymakers just weren't able to think through all the potential scenarios. And I wasn't given specific declaratory powers. Those powers lie with the minister. So the whole idea of doing a self-assessment and an assessment was the best thing I thought that we could do to make sure that companies were giving us their best efforts in providing us with the most information, doing the exercise themselves, because ultimately it is up to them and their lawyers to decide whether or not they comply. But I wanted to give Australians as much clarity as I could, and I wanted to make sure it was aligned with the policy intent that Parliament had set out.
So you think some of those platforms could be added sooner rather than later? I know you sort of said that Twitch was the last one you were going to announce, and that was sort of the end of before the ban came in, but obviously there are some other ones that are there. Are you going to be looking to sort of, I guess, grow the list as time goes on?
I think so, but we'll do it appropriately. And I think to contextualize this a little bit, in terms of some of these companies that we've already spoken to that are likely to be migratory targets, some of them have assessed themselves as an age-restricted social media platform. So they're not necessarily welcoming the insurgence of 8 to 15-year-olds onto their platform. That brings other challenges, but they're building the tooling. Some of these are much newer platforms.
Can I just ask you as well, if you're looking at back at the bigger picture, what is driving you in this fight as we sort of enter this age of where some social media platforms are being banned in Australia for under 16s?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I raised concerns about the approach very early. I know you know my water safety analogy well, that we have to teach kids to swim. And we've been providing digital literacy and more recently algorithmic literacy programs to schools, through schools, and doing youth-based research. So we actually know what kids are doing, what they're using, what harms they're experiencing, how those harms are manifesting and impacting them, and even comparing what kids experience to what their parents think is happening. There was internal research from YouTube saying that they knew the blue light disturbs speech. They knew that YouTube was keeping them addicted and that they were playing age-inappropriate games. This is evidence from their own internal documents, which they knew about, but decided to ignore and then prioritize profits over protections. These deceptive and harmful design features, whether they're snap streaks or autoplay or opaque algorithms that drive the outragement and that vicious circle of outrage and monetization by the platforms, by the influencers, and create this really dangerous spiral. You know, we as adults struggle sometimes to fight against these invisible forces. What chance do our children have? So it's not a fair fight.
We'll be right back. So we've spoken to a few different teens as well who say that the ban is not the answer. They think the platforms should be regulated rather than outright ban. Obviously, it's sort of as you were saying, a lot of the harms that we're seeking to address with the ban also affect adults as well as teens. I know it's, you know, you didn't design the legislation, but as the regulator, how do you respond to those concerns?
Yeah, I mean, I'm given a tool set by Parliament. And, you know, there are a lot of times as a regulator where I've really wanted to insert myself into the policymaking process and say, hey, this sounds good in practice. Or sorry, this sounds good in concept, but in practice, how would I actually implement this and make it successful? Even taking action against Anthony Rotondo, the fellow that was creating the deep fakes, or sending end users against kids that are sending rape and death threats to other kids as a form of deterrence, it are things that we've been doing for the past 10 years. So we have been regulating, but what I would say is, these are probably incremental steps. And now that we have more regulators around the globe and we've got the same, a similar, path or direction, we're seeing more impact. But I think what the government wanted to do, and when I say government, I mean all parties, and I also mean the states and territories as well, is they wanted to see something really monumental rather than just incremental. So this really, I think, is forming as a circuit breaker. Yes, obviously, everyone is watching to see if it fizzles out or if there's, I don't know, an electrical fire.
I mean, I think for kids, a lot of them have been saying, I saw this in the Prime Minister's press conference they did with Behind the News, that a lot of them feel left out of the process. I'm thinking, of course, of kids who live in regional Australia, LGBTQ kids, those who are living with disability. When this comes in, this could be a lifeline cut off for them. What do you say to them? What's it going to mean for them coming into this week?
Well, that was the very set of concerns that I raised before the legislation was tabled, because our research with the First Nations communities, the disabled communities, and kids that identify as LGBTQI+ told us a few key things. The first is that they all feel more themselves online than they do in the real world. This is how they connect and they find their tribe. And even though all of them experience much higher degrees of online hate vis-a-vis the rest of the community, to them it was worth it. So that was precisely the language I used. Please don't cut off kids' lifelines. We need some exclusions, so we're not cutting off the entire internet, which is why I call it one of the reasons I call it a delay rather than an absolute ban or a prohibition.
Going a bit broader, it's fair to say that the incoming social media ban, along with some of your other regulatory powers in the Online Safety Act, has probably boosted your prominence worldwide in the last couple of years. You've been dragged into fights with Elon Musk. You've been called a zealot by a US Republican congressman. What is that like for you, like to have that sort of attention, I guess?
Well, to be honest, I took this role 9 years ago because I felt passionate about online safety. And I had tried to be an internal antagonist within three major technology companies and only came a certain way. I actually never expected to become a public figure. In fact, you would know this. When you spend time in the tech sector, you rarely front the media. Mm-hmm. I was so bad in some of those first, and maybe I'm still bad, I don't know, those first media performances, because I had to learn how to do it in my late 40s, you know, on the job here. So, yeah, no, a lot has happened. I mean, when the richest man in the world with 200 million followers blows a loud dog whistle and refers to you as the e-safety commissar trying to globally regulate the internet, that's kind of a bit of misinformation that we haven't been able to shake. You know, nothing you will see in any of our filings or any of my statements say that that is something that we have ever aspired to. But of course, we don't have an Australian internet. It's a global internet. And all of this illegal content, from child sexual abuse material to terrorist and violent extremism, is based largely on servers in California. And in the vast majority of cases, every day, these companies are taking down illegal content that violates their terms of service globally. And I guess the cautionary tale is, Josh, I think you probably know the story, but it's become very prominent with the Southport here sentencing proceedings, where Axel Rudakabana, the 17-year-old radicalized young man who killed those three little girls at the dance studio in Southport, had watched that very same Wakely video on X and said that was what incited him to kill those little girls. So to say that there isn't an impact of having violent extremism accessible all over the internet that normalizes, desensitizes, and sometimes radicalizes. I mean, you listen to Mike Burgess. Of all his open terrorism cases, they're all young men between the ages of 14 and 22 who've been radicalized some way on the internet. So
you've been in the job, I guess, 9 years now. Is it something that you can keep going and plugging away at?
I mean, my term ends in mid-January 2027, if I make it that long. 10 years will be a good way to round things out. I'll be able to get a few more things done, and then it'll be time to hand the reins over to someone else, I think. But the job's gotten progressively harder, I'll say that. You know, when your kids start being targeted, you start getting credible death threats, and the police need to escort you into things, and you have to walk into your office in different ways and change the way you live and carry yourself. That comes at a real cost.
Julie Mingrant, thank you very much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That was the eSafety Commissioner, Julie Mingrant. You can find more on the social media ban on theguardian.com. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Jess O'Brien and Karishma Luthria. Sound design and mixing by Joe Koenig. The executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. If you like this episode, don't forget to subscribe or follow Full Story wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also leave a review. I'm Josh Taylor. Catch you next time.